Hello, and welcome to our At Any Rate Emerging Markets Focus podcast, a place for us to discuss recent developments and key issues of focus in the emerging market fixed income asset class. I'm Johnny Goulden from the Emerging Markets Strategy Team here at JP Morgan, and I'm joined by Saad Siddiqui, also from our Emerging Markets Strategy Team. Saad, thanks for joining.
Hi, good to be here.
So the overall environment, we think, still looks broadly supportive for EM. The latest US data barrage was not too concerning against the market, which has already repriced the Fed to a more shallow easing path. And that question about the easing path of the Fed or the hiking path of the Fed still remains the primary risk for EM. And thoughts are now turning to a shallow cutting cycle, really away from where we were last year, thinking about higher for longer. So that higher for longer concern has morphed into a high for long once the Fed paused. And since it's been signaling since December that it is thinking about cutting, the market's focus is really on maybe the cutting cycle will be shallower, i.e. fewer cuts than had originally been priced. Let's say the Fed only cuts three times and then is on hold and waiting to see what the impact is. So thinking through that for EM assets is really going to be the topic of our discussion today. And Saad, let's start with the overall framework around that. Is an environment where the Fed, let's say, cuts three times, is it just slightly less concerning than high for long? I.e., it's high for long, but with 75 basis point lower Fed funds rate, or do you think it's a different kind of risk environment?
Well, one would assume that it's a more benign type of risk environment. I mean, if we just take a step back, this whole concept of high for longer or higher for longer has been with us now for the past several quarters, at least since Q2 of last year, maybe earlier than that. And it started off with the concept really implying that maybe Fed funds rate will have to get to 6% or 7%, and it really seemed unbounded about what higher for longer meant. And clearly that nature of higher for longer entailed a lot more uncertainty and entailed a lot more adverse type of scenarios for risk markets and for emerging markets as well. And then we evolved a little bit, and the question became about staying high for longer at high levels at the current rate of 5.25 for longer. And again, that's something slightly different. And now we're talking about the Fed maybe cutting less and the cutting cycle being a bit more shallow. And again, that's a little bit more benign versus the other two kind of definitions of what high for longer has meant. So ultimately, I think what we've been transitioning towards is a situation where we're still looking at rate cuts, and now the market's wondering, are we going to get more or less cuts than what's priced in? So, you know, I think that's clearly a more benign type of high for longer than what we were thinking about a few months ago.
And do you think, is that sort of a hunch, or is there any data that you think supports that kind of thinking about it?
The first thing I'd say is the whole question is premised on the level of rates mattering. And if you go back historically and you just plot the returns of emerging market assets against the level of US yields, whether in real terms or in nominal terms, you find that there's really no relationship between the level of rates and subsequent returns on emerging market assets. And that's exactly what we should expect. If you think about asset prices as being the sum of discounted cash flows, well, the level of the interest rate itself, if it's constant, is not going to impact the asset price. You need to have a change in that discount rate to impact asset prices, or you need something happening to your numerator. So what we find historically, it's the change in yields that matters most for emerging market returns, again, as you would expect from a textbook. So in that sense, if the Fed delivers exactly what's priced from here on in, it probably means that we're not necessarily, I don't think that's an adverse environment. If anything, your discount rate is coming lower. To the extent that it's priced, it probably means you don't have a lot more upside to asset prices from here. And maybe that explains why volatility recently has also been low, because you have such static expectations more recently for what the Fed's going to be doing in the next few quarters.
So, you know, we're talking obviously about levels of rates, but how important do you think something like risk appetite overall is in thinking about the impact of that environment?
That's a good point, because we focus a lot on interest rates, either the level or change of interest rates. And the implicit assumption is that somehow that has a one-for-one relationship with risk appetite. But if you just think in a very cursory way about the last few episodes of risk appetite, you know, you think about in the 2000s, for example, you had risk appetite that was very strong. Maybe it peaked in 2006, but interest rates were also high at that time. Meanwhile, you go back to the late 90s, and interest rates similarly, and by interest rates, I mean the Fed funds rate, was high and elevated, yet emerging market assets didn't do well then. And more recently, over the last decade, we had a world where interest rates were very low and growth was also very low. I mean, let's not forget, we were concerned about, you know, deflation risks more so than inflation risks prior to COVID. And again, risk appetite was quite strong in that you were getting significant inflows coming into EM assets through the kind of early part, at least, of the kind of QE era. So I think, you know, we have to make a judgment call here that risk appetite is something that it's hard to really get a grip on. Sometimes you have strong risk appetite with high growth. Sometimes you have strong risk appetite with low growth. And similarly, with high and low interest rates. I personally err on the side that if we're in an environment where the business cycle really is extending here, despite high rates, and we critically keep a floor on commodities prices, and some of this stimulus in China gets at least some partial traction, then I think it overall should be a positive year. But I would be remiss to not mention the wild card for risk appetite this year, which is the U.S. elections coming up. It's still some way away in November, but one gets the feeling that that could be a big risk appetite event. Not sure in what direction yet. But you know, taking a step back, Johnny, there's other channels as well through which the degree of Fed cuts and whether we have a shallow cycle or not are going to impact emerging markets. So how would you flesh out some of those channels?
Yeah, so I think we could probably think as well about four channels that we could delve a bit into. Obviously, in an environment where Fed funds are lower from current levels, but still higher than maybe we were used to in the last cycle, at least, it probably is going to act as a limit to how low EM rates can go. Policy rates can be limited by financial stability concerns and some of the inflation pass-through from FX. It can erode EM's FX carry advantage against the dollar as well. We can think about how it can limit portfolio flows into emerging market assets. And also, refinancing costs are not going to come back to those low levels that maybe we saw midway through the 2010 cycle. And so there can be lingering questions about cost of debt service, which can continue to rise. So I think those are the channels. But bringing it back to this market at the moment, Saar, do you think the market is complacent on interest rates at the moment when you look at how EM is potentially versus the US? And how should a shallow cutting cycle also impact our currencies in EM?
So the way I would frame it is that for rates markets, we're pricing in short-term independence of monetary policy in EM from the Fed. But longer term, there's clearly more dependence. And I think there's less room at the long end of EM yield curves to really rally unless we reprice terminal rates in the US as well. So for a lot of EMs right now, where starting point is very high level of rates still, either in nominal or real terms. Inflation, which is falling, there's still some normalization to go. And that's not really a function of what the Fed's doing. And those cutting cycles are already underway. So I think that short-term inversion of yield curves and pricing of cuts, I think that is fair. You look at the long end of yields, however, in places like Asia, we're at close to historical extremes in terms of the tightness of local 10-year bond yields or swap spreads to the US, a bit more mixed outside of Asia. But I think there you have some more constraints as far as the ability of long-end bond yields to rally from current levels. On the FX side, I think it is going to depend a lot on the risk appetite factor that we just mentioned a little bit earlier. There's an additional factor here, which is we are in a pretty low vol regime for various reasons. And I think that inhibits fast gains in currencies, even if the overall environment, as we think, is going to be supportive for positive returns in EM. But that kind of carry environment, we do have some silver linings there for EM, which is the reemergence of some frontier markets as being viable long positions again. So, you know, Egypt recently starts to look attractive as well. So I think if we're in a world where vol stays low and carry strategies are really what are attractive there, then frontier markets, I think, now present pretty compelling opportunities again after being off the radar for some time. But let's think about EM bond fund flows, Johnny. It seems like we've continued to see outflows year to date. You know, do you think these higher rates, or if the Fed's going to be in a shallow cutting cycle, is that going to inhibit those flows from returning, or do we continue to see outflows?
Yeah, so I think the intuition behind the impact of the level of cash rates in the US is simple enough. You know, if you have a higher risk-free rate where you can earn a decent carry, then it raises the bar for investors who have a certain hurdle they need to achieve. And that means they don't need to reach for EM fixed income carry. And in some ways, the fact pattern of the last couple of years looks like it supports that. What you had is, as rates started to go up, when the Fed was hiking, dollar cash rates have soared and flows into US money market funds have ballooned over $6 trillion now in those funds. It's about $1 trillion increase over the last year and a half or so. And at the same time, you've had outflows from EM bond funds. So that whole intuition sounds like it has some support in the last 2 years. And it is plausible, but it is difficult to see that relationship when you look at the data over a longer period of time. So there isn't a very significant relationship that we can see between what cash rates are in the US and what EM fund flows have done. And some of those factors that you've highlighted as well about those different regimes of risk appetite obviously come into play there. Another limitation is obviously during the last cycle, actually monetary policy was conducted mostly via QE and not at the short end of the curve. And so we've tended to emphasize the relationship between balance sheet of central banks in DM and subsequent EM fund flows, rather than being able to see that relationship via wherever Fed funds were or the, you know, close enough US cash rate.
And what about EM credit? Surely, if you have higher risk-free rates, that's going to continue to put pressure on sovereigns, on indebted sovereigns, and their ability to continue to finance their liabilities.
Yeah, so I think risk-free rates remaining above recent norms will impact EM countries' cost of debt, but probably only quite slowly. And, you know, you can see that the cost of debt, just look at interest over the debt stock, has been rising since the Fed started hiking, but it's actually quite low still historically, and it's really quite slow moving because you have bonds issued with, let's say, 5-10 year maturities. As they mature, they get refinanced. That will be at higher rates, but that process is obviously a slow one. Some of these countries, particularly in frontier, only have one to a handful of bonds outstanding. And so countries will see their debt costs rising if global rates don't come back to where they were in the last cycle, but probably quite slowly. That could put a floor on really how low EM spreads can get, but it's not really enough to be immediate cause of concern or really to start seeing default risk rise in a more significant way. And that brings us to the end of this JP Morgan at Any Rate Emerging Markets Focused podcast. Thanks to you, Saad, for joining today. And thank you all for listening. And we hope to have you back again with us for the next one. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please refer to JP Morgan research reports related to its content for more information, including important disclosures. 2024 JP Morgan Chase & Company, all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on the 14th of March, 2024.